Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. Elaine McCarthy. Elaine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay, the sentencing happened earlier this year. Kyle Hayes, there was two charges, violent disorder inside and indeed outside a nightclub, and attacking your son, Killian. And Killian, as we know, suffered significant injuries. First of all, Elaine, what was your initial reaction to the fact that Kyle Hayes, in the words of somebody as he was leaving the court that day, at least you're going home tonight? It was a suspended sentence. A significant sentence was suspended. What was your reaction?
I suppose I didn't really have a reaction, Joe, at the time. We left the court thinking he had a conviction for two violent disorders.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as we were concerned, he was a convicted criminal.
Yeah.
He didn't go to prison, but he has, you know, he's that hanging over him for the rest of his life.
Okay.
He, you know, so I suppose when you reflect back on it and you sit down and you think about it, you know, you feel as if the system has failed you.
And then
the system has failed Killian.
The system, okay. And how did you feel at the weekend when you heard he'd been inducted into the GAA All-Stars Hall of Fame?
Absolutely disgusted. You know, the GAA standing over this type of behaviour, you know, it's unbelievable.
Now, the GAA would say that people who pick the All-Stars are a panel of 12 journalists, and they picked it, and we spoke to one of them yesterday, and he indicated, first of all, that any issues with Kyle, the journalists, they obviously knew about him. Any issue, and the court case was only earlier this year, and the suspended sentence. Any issues with Kyle were not raised during the discussion as to whether he would get and be inducted into the Hall of Fame as an All-Star. Were you surprised that the issue didn't even arise?
Yes. I mean, since when did convicted criminals become role models?
Mm-hmm. And the other question that came up yesterday, Elaine, because you would have heard that many people, especially from Limerick, were in support of him. Did Kyle Hayes ever apologise to Killian or his family, either directly or indirectly through his legal team?
Absolutely not, Joe. We never, ever got an apology from Kyle Hayes.
Did you ever read of an apology in a newspaper or hear anything?
John Kiley apologised for him.
His manager, who also gave a character reference.
Absolutely.
And what did you think of that character reference from John Kiley?
Disgusted. Very, very disappointed.
Okay.
That John Kiley could stand there and condone that behaviour.
Well, John would say, I wasn't condoning it. I was saying he was of good character and people are entitled to a character reference. But anyway, you were upset that that character reference, it didn't have to be given, but it was given.
Absolutely. He had that decision. That was his choice.
Yeah. Now, how's Killian been since? First of all, Elaine, how did you find out about this serious incident? It happened in October 2019. When did you first become aware that your son had been injured?
It was the morning after. It was the Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Killian had texted me to turn the alarm off in the house. He was staying out that night with friends.
Okay.
So he wasn't coming home.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Mom, turn off the alarm. And it was quite early. And I was kind of thinking, jeepers, he could have come home. You know, if he's coming home this early, he didn't have to stay out last night.
Yeah.
And he arrived at the front door. And my world fell apart.
When you saw him.
He stood there in front of me with a big face. His eye was put back into his head. His face was full of blood. And I just went, oh, my Lord, what happened to you? And, you know, Killian is such a quiet lad. I couldn't believe that he'd ever be involved in anything, let alone come home to me in the state he came home.
And when did you realise, for example, the upper eye was fractured and required surgery? How soon after did you realise how serious the injuries were?
Well, Killian had come from the hospital, so I was a little bit surprised he hadn't called me that night.
Okay.
And he said, "No, Mum, I didn't want to worry you."
Okay.
So he had an appointment to go back out to the Max Oriel Patient Clinic on the Tuesday, which was the next day. And Dr. Gilbride was the doctor there, and he tended to Killian. So he wanted to get him in as quickly as possible then to repair the damage.
And the effect it has had on Killian, where is Killian now, Elaine?
Thankfully, Joe, Killian's in Australia.
Oh, God.
So it's the first weekend this year that I could actually relax and think Killian's not in Limerick. Because every year, Joe, that fear, that anxiety rises in me.
Every weekend.
So Killian, every bank holiday weekend, that anniversary. So Killian's gone to Australia with his girlfriend since October.
And is he hoping to stay for a while, or is it a holiday?
No, hopefully he'll stay for a couple of years.
Wow. And you're saying this...
He's young.
Yeah, of course. He is young. But you're saying this is a relief to you and the family?
Absolutely.
And what about Killian himself and his partner? Are they happy that they're...
They are. They had kind of planned it anyway for quite some time.
Okay.
And I suppose with the whole delay with the case and everything, Killian couldn't move anywhere.
And how was Killian, say, in the year afterwards? How did it affect him?
Oh, it had a profound effect on him, Joe. He was... Killian is a very laid-back character.
Okay.
I would describe him as a gentle giant.
Yeah.
He's a twin.
Yeah.
And he'd be the quieter of the twins. You know, they always say one is more dominant than the other. So he was very hardworking, enjoyed life. And then he just became totally withdrawn, totally into himself, cross, and which wouldn't be like Killian at all.
I see at one stage, I felt very frustrated. I took my anger out on my family, and it affected them considerably. They experienced considerable distress.
It did, yes. It affected the wider family. Killian. It wasn't just his parents and his brother. It was his grandparents, his aunts and his uncle. It affected everybody.
Yeah, understandably. Now, if Kyle Hayes did issue some form of, as you say, you're disgusted that he's been inducted into the All-Stars. If, for example, he said, "No, I don't want to take it as a statement of my atonement, and I want to formally apologise to Killian." I know he pleaded not guilty, you know that, but he was found guilty by a court. If he was to say sorry, would it make a difference?
No, because it would be for the wrong reasons, Joe.
At this stage.
It's a little too late. It's 5 years too late.
Yeah. I don't know whether you heard the number of people yesterday who were saying he does great work. He helps out in apparently a hospice on Saturday down that part of the country. He's very good with young people. And also, it was Pat Wallace, indeed, former director of the National Museum, who's from that area. He said, like, the past is the past. He's got a suspended sentence, but that will hang over him. That sentence is on his file, so to speak. What do you think of that argument, Elaine? Well, the past is the past.
The past is the past, Joe. But just because he's a great boy and he goes into the hospice doesn't take away from the fact of what he did to Killian.
Yeah.
You know, he, only for the Gardaí arriving on that night, Killian may not be alive today. You know, I mean, the kicks that were put to Killian's head were ferocious.
Yeah. The Gardaí witnessed that, and they said it in court.
Absolutely.
And up to
and
that,
he was lying on the ground in the fetal position, covering his head, asking them to stop. And the more he asked them to stop, the more ferocious their kicks got.
Yeah, yeah.
So that doesn't take away that Kyle can go into a few hospices and hospitals and portray the Liam McCarthy. It doesn't take away from what he did to Killian.
And in terms of Killian's confidence and personality afterwards, Elaine?
He had no confidence, Joe.
Okay.
You know, it took time, and then COVID happened.
Killian couldn't
he couldn't access counselling.
Yeah, oh, of course.
So there was no support for Killian as the victim. Killian, we had to work together as a family and pull Killian through.
Because the offences happened for which Kyle Hayes was convicted. They happened in late 2019, but COVID lockdown began in March 2020, 5 months later, and lasted for 2 years.
Yeah, and we've had this hanging over us for 5 years as well, or 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and Killian was the victim here. Let's not forget that.
Killian went out.
Killian didn't go out and ask to be beaten.
Yeah.
He didn't ask to be kicked. He went out for a few drinks with his friends. He didn't come home the same way he went out.
And do you think the victim has been forgotten?
Oh, totally. Mm. It's all been about Kyle. Oh, poor Kyle. You know, Kyle has had this hanging over him. Well, so have we.
Yeah.
You know, I'm Killian's mom. Killian's my boy. You know, we've all suffered mentally as well. So it hasn't just had a profound effect on Kyle. Kyle was the instigator here.
Yeah.
Not Killian.
And at one stage you said to Killian, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
And this was all evidence given in court. The GAA have a document about respect. I read it out yesterday and it said respect is important both on and off the pitch. But then they sent in a statement about the All-Stars saying this has nothing really to do with them. It's an independent panel of judges and they don't actually try and influence it one way or the other. The reason why obviously you can be considered for the All-Stars is that you play during the year and you perform. And he has been playing and he has been performing. So that renders him eligible for All-Star consideration and he got it. What do you think of the argument which a number of people made yesterday that he should have been suspended from playing once this emerged? Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, there's people turning in their graves, Joe, at the moment, thinking that there's a convicted criminal wearing the green and white jersey.
Yeah.
You know, he shouldn't have been left play. There was other members on that Limerick squad that were dropped for a lot less.
Yeah.
And yet he was condemned. He was hailed a hero.
Because he's supposed to be such a brilliant player. What did someone say yesterday? If the GAA was professional...
They couldn't buy him.
Yeah.
Hmm. Hmm. Well, I'll tell you another thing, Joe. I love GAA.
Yeah.
And I took the Biddy Early curse from Mayo and put it onto Limerick this year so that they wouldn't win the All-Ireland.
Okay. And what does Killian hope to work at out in Australia? He is a qualified carpenter, wasn't he? Self-employed.
Yes, he was self-employed.
Great.
Yeah. So he's got himself a little government job outside in Australia at the moment.
Okay.
So he's in Brisbane and he's absolutely loving life.
Okay. And you think in one way, I know it's a relief for you and your family, but you think the fact that he's in Australia is a relief for Killian and his partner as well?
I would imagine so, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just away from everything.
Okay.
Because every time Kyle gets himself into the news, Killian's in the news as well.
Okay. And then finally we heard yesterday people saying, oh, Kyle is always in the news and every time it comes up and will people not let it, someone said the media, even though we got calls from listeners, will the media not just let it go? What do you think of that argument, Elaine?
Well, Joe, in my opinion, if you're in the limelight, you need to behave in a particular way.
Okay.
If you're deemed as a role model for children, you need to behave in a particular way. So if Kyle is in the media for the wrong reasons, well, then Kyle needs to man up and start behaving in a proper way if he wants to stay out of the media.
And you think part of that proper way would be in some shape or form, even though it's a bit late, but to say he's sorry.
Well, behave himself.
OK, Elaine, kind regards to you and your family, and above all, kind regards to Killian and his partner out in Australia. Best of luck to them and good health above all else. And thank you so much for contacting us, and thank you so much for clarifying so many things that people were or seemed to be unaware of yesterday. Genuinely, they were unaware that Kyle Hayes had never made any attempt after his conviction to apologise. Elaine McCarthy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie and 51551 is the text number. Julia Gaynor. Julia, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Well, first of all, condolences. Your father, Raymond, he died just over a month ago on Thursday, October the 3rd, and he was buried, brought from the funeral home to Glasnevin. And then began a series of events. Tell us what happened, Julie. Obviously, the funeral was well organised and conducted. But then you rang the cemetery. It's Glasnevin, obviously, Dublin Cemeteries Trust. You rang with a very straightforward query, and what happened?
Well, the first query went on the Tuesday to the funeral directors. I said, look, send me the bill, we've got it sorted, and okay, can I have my dad's ashes? And they said, would you like them released? They give the family, like, respectful distance before they say the mm-hmm. ashes are available. So it was, in fact, Jennings that inquired about the ashes on the Tuesday, wow, which was the following Thursday, or Tuesday was the 15th. Mm-hmm. And then I got a call on the 17th from the guy we spoke to who had been dealing with us so nicely in Jennings,
yeah,
to say that my dad hadn't been cremated.
Okay.
And I said, why not? And he says, well, the cremator is gone. And I said, so where's my dad right now? And he says, we don't know. We're trying to find out.
Okay.
Because the email that went in on Tuesday the 15th, they didn't get a response for that until the 17th saying, the ashes aren't available yet. Email us next week. Hopefully we'll have them then.
Okay.
So he said, I'll ring you the following morning. So to be fair, he rang me the next day on the 18th. And he said that he hadn't had a response yet from Glasnevin and that he'd ring me back.
Mm-hmm.
On the next call, he still wasn't able to give me an update. So at that time, I got the number and I started to call. Now, initially, I couldn't get through. Finally got through to the office, gave the name, the date that we were brought to Glasnevin. I was asked to wait while the computer was checked. And then I was told he's most likely in Newlands. So for 24
when they say
hours,
Newlands, I mean Newlands Cross, the cemetery
Cross,
and
the
crematorium up there.
Crematorium across in Newlands.
Okay, near Tally, yeah.
So you don't know where my dad is.
Hmm.
Now, from the day before I got the call at 4:15 till Friday afternoon, it was torment. No idea where he was. I kept it from my family because I didn't want them, okay, to feel the way I was feeling, which is just shocking. So I said, so you don't know where my dad is right now? And she says, I'll get a manager to call you.
And what was going through your head, Julie?
I thought he was lost, Joe.
Okay.
I thought that they just didn't know where he was because,
yeah,
they were 2 days late getting back to the funeral home with any kind of answer as to where the ashes were. And with that, it wasn't even he's being done Monday, he's being,
yeah,
done on Tuesday. It was hopefully we'll have them next week. Then when our funeral director escalated,
mm-hmm,
he didn't get a response to his email. But then I got on and she escalated then to a manager and a lovely man called me and he was kind of thrown into the middle of this then and tried his very best to kind of alleviate any fears I had. And he said that he'd go and find out what was happening.
Okay.
So he called me back about an hour later to say that my dad was in Glasnevin.
His remains,
like,
his remains were in Glasnevin.
He wasn't lost. He was in Glasnevin. I thought, why couldn't anybody tell me that earlier on?
Mm.
And then I, you know, all of these conversations were through tears, Joe. I couldn't have had this conversation with you last week.
Yeah.
I'm quite factual about it now, but it's, yeah, just been tormenting to not know where your dad was and then to also know that he's been there for 12 days, 288 hours, Joe, in a room, in a coffin, by himself.
Okay.
So he said to me that he was very sorry, that he has been across to Newlands, which started a whole other irrational fear of me being on the M50. I was actually in the back of a DPD van, but he reassured me that they have vehicles to transport coffins. But that wasn't good enough. I said to him, like, we brought my dad to you in a hearse with dignity, with respect, and you've just left him there.
Yeah.
So he was the whole thing was we haven't forgotten about him, and that was fine. He said he was really sorry. He could reassure me that he'd have the ashes on Monday. He'd personally drop them out. And as I say, he's a manager. He was a nice man. He was doing his utmost best to sort out the issue, but it never should have come to that. So I kind of left it on the Friday. Didn't tell my family on the Friday. Didn't tell them on the Saturday. Saturday night, my husband's like, they have to know. You have to tell them. But I was so tormented, Joe. I didn't want to tell them because I said, I can't have that feeling this way. It's bad enough we lost our dad. We didn't. I was trying to protect them from how I was feeling.
Yeah.
So I spoke to them and then I made the decision. I'm going to Glasnevin on Monday morning. This is not good enough. Because I'd started to do a little bit of research online, looking at their governance reports, where it said that, you know, a body should be cremated within 72 hours if they're not, that the family should be notified.
And when you, Julie, when you were told originally the cremator, was it, what was your understanding of what a cremator is was?
Initially, I thought it was the person. but then I, you know, soon realised the following day they were talking about the actual machine that cremates the body.
Well, in fact, you are right, because I looked up earlier a definition of cremator. And there's two definitions. One, a person who cremates. Mm-hmm. Or two, an instrument for cremating dead bodies, a furnace, in other words, or whatever. But so there are two meanings. But you were rightly confused, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
So you were. So did you go up on Monday the 21st?
We went with one of my sisters up on Monday the 21st.
To Glasnevin,
To Glasnevin, unannounced. So, you know, the gentleman I had spoken to on the Friday was on his way back from Newlands and, you know, kindly met us. He wasn't expecting us. We were brought into a family room and we sat down. And I had drafted an email over the weekend to say that we wanted an investigation as to why my dad was left for so long, why you didn't operate to your own governance guidelines, why we weren't told, why he was, and I hate to use this word, as we're talking about it, this person outsourced.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's shocking. Then I sent him that email whilst we were talking, so it's something in writing to get the ball rolling, and we said that we wanted a visibility from the time the curtains closed to the 18th when we started to inquire as to where he was. And it's an important thing to say, Joe, when those curtains close, you trust the people that are there to look after your loved one. And for us, our dad was such a dub. And I think Glasnevin was like a rite of passage. And I never doubted ever the process of the cremation. Yeah. You know, I have full faith in that my mom was cremated there 11 years ago. So I know some people have fears, and that was never any of our fears because we know the practice when it's done properly is done well.
Okay.
But in this case, the cremator broke down and then everything else, in my opinion, did because they weren't able to do what they needed to do within the guidelines. One of the main things that came out of the conversation on Monday was he said, yes, he would get back to us with a report, and he did. I felt it wasn't satisfactory. I sent him that back in an email. But the thing was that came out about all of this was we sent an email to all of the undertakers to tell them that the cremation was broken.
Okay.
The undertaker should have told you. Because I said, Joe, there's no way we would have brought our dad there. If we had have known afterwards, he would be removed from that room, put into a van, ooshed across the M50 to be in another room. It just wouldn't have happened. It just would not have happened. So they said that the undertakers had an email. I said, my undertaker did not have an email. I've checked with them. They haven't. And he's like, I dictated an email for all of the undertakers. They all had it. It was up to them to let you know. And I said, I'm telling you now. They didn't. I said, but even beside that, you're not operating within your governance, that if it was 72 hours, you should tell us. So, turns out, very long meeting, kind of going around in circles. The report was promised, corrective actions were promised, and I said, you have to send another email out to all of the Fiona directors. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, that's been done. That's the only good thing that's come out of this.
And there's now, well, and increasing, there's now 10 crematoria on the island of Ireland, two in the north, and the other eight are in the south. But the Dublin Cemeteries Trust say that it was October the 19th, as you said, that your father's remains were cremated at Newlands Cross.
Moved on the 18th, cremated on the 19th.
Yeah.
So again, in a room overnight. So if I may, I'll just finish about the okay. email, because this is really important, I feel. I said to him, when did the cremator go down? And the answer was recently. I pushed. I said, what's recently? And I was told a few weeks. Then we get a call just prior to the report coming out on the Thursday to say, from this gentleman. Again, lovely man.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Great staff, yeah.
Julie, we did, in fact, send an email out to the undertakers, and I've just had Jennings on, a manager, and he's given out, and he's nitpicking, and he's saying that we should have got back in contact with them. And I was just like, well, sugar, after all that, we should have been told. Mm-hmm. A couple of minutes later, my person in Jennings rang and said, we got the email. I said, I know, I just heard. And I said, when did you get the email? He goes, in May.
About a few months ago. Now, Dublin Cemeteries Trust they've issued us a long, long statement. It's unfortunate they can't give us a spokesperson, but Dublin Cemeteries, I don't have enough time to read out the statement. Dublin Cemeteries, I'm going to paraphrase, Dublin Cemeteries Trust apologises unreservedly to the family of the late Mr. Raymond Gaynor for the circumstances surrounding the cremation of their beloved father. But they do, I suppose this is the thing of it, as a result of the issues outlined and raised by the Gaynor family and the constructive comments they made, Dublin Cemeteries Trust will put in place the following actions as a matter of urgency, an additional component to our internal reporting whereby the crematorium team will share with the front office team on a daily basis a written summary of any and all movement of remains from one cemetery to another. Again, I'm paraphrasing. Additional communication to funeral directors to reiterate that Glasnevin Crematorium is not currently operational, and stating that families should be informed. While services can still be held in the chapel at Glasnevin, the actual cremation will take place in either Newlands Cross or Dardistown until further notice. So there's no idea when the crematorium...
They basically sent on to you the report that they sent on to me. It doesn't sound like you've received anything different.
Yeah, but they... Okay, I'll come to that point.
Oh, I accepted the apology.
Okay, but that was fair, yeah.
I mean, I think everybody has a right to apologise. And nobody did this on purpose.
Yeah, of course.
And it happened because they work in line with their own governance. It's not regulated, Joe. There's no oversight. They don't have to answer to absolutely anybody. Okay. I think the corrective actions that they suggested are so rudimentary. I mean, we will give a handwritten note to the front office so that they know who's due to go out that day. That person should have the software so they have real-time information. Okay. You know, they were going to share what they were going to do with the trust and make sure everybody knows. I mean, like, seriously, as far as I'm concerned, it should have gone steps further.
And what do you think should be in place for?
For example, each person has a unique number. And as I said to your researcher earlier on, you can track a package from China the second you put an order in. Why can't we find out where our loved ones are? Mm-hmm. You know, that's for one. Get rid of these handwritten notes that's telling the front office in case they get a query as to where a person is. If the front office don't, in fact, actually know, don't speculate.
Yeah, yeah, okay. The Department of Rural...
I also think that if they're in backlog, they should not take in any more services. They should shut down. I think there should be something within their software that if they are closed, that the manual intervention doesn't have to come in where to send an email. Something should automatically be sent.
But where would remains rest in the interim?
They can be cremated elsewhere.
Okay,
they can be cremated elsewhere. And if it's like the UK where it's such a larger population and lead times, you know, do we need to change our processes? Do we need to introduce something else into the crematorium where our loved ones can rest safely for longer? There's a reason they have 72 hours.
But it's the fact that you didn't know where your father's remains were.
Didn't know where he was.
The Department of Rural and Community Development, who were in charge of legislation and policy in relation to cemeteries, say we have no role in regard to crematoria. There is currently no specific legislation relating to cremation in Ireland. In the absence of specific legislation, many crematoria have developed their own code of ethics that they choose to follow. The department has no role in this regard. But you would like to see, as the number of crematoria increase, that there should be some overall ethics and some overall regulator or regulation.
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, the population is getting bigger. The deaths are increasing. So they've nobody to answer to. There's no audits. There's no regulator. They're supposed to operate within the confines of the code of ethics that they've developed themselves with the Institute of Cemeteries and Crematorium Management in the UK. So I don't doubt that they aim to operate within their code of ethics. But when that falls down, then what?
Okay. And Julie,
it's almost like ignorance is blind. Don't tell them. Let's just try and get this done, get it sorted.
And Julie, obviously you were, as you say, you articulated your distress in great detail. How are you all now? Apart from grieving from your dad, do you accept that it was just a breakdown of communications and a perfect storm of a broken machine? And
I don't think it was a perfect storm, Joe. I have my speculations where I don't actually think he was booked on in the first place, hence when people were looking for him, they couldn't find him. I think the process broke down. I think their production broke down. And I think that they walked by his coffin multiple times over nearly a two-week
So you stand with your conviction that there should be a regulator, there should be some overall.
100%. Okay. Look, nobody did anything on purpose.
Yeah, I know that.
Let's be very clear about this. Yeah. And when you introduce a human element to any production, which unfortunately is what we have to call this, there is going to be mistakes. And you need to try and minimise those mistakes as much as you can. But once you start taking somebody out of an enclosed production environment and start introducing more people, cars, motorways, different venues for things to happen, things are going to go wrong.
And as I say, there's now 10 crematoria on the island. I don't know what the statistics are, but I'd say that it must be at least 30-40% of people who are now cremated. Tell us about Raymond, most importantly. Tell us about your dad. Where was he from originally?
He was from Queen Street originally.
In the centre of Dublin.
And, you know, like the last song we played for him was Dublin in the Railroad Time.
Oh, great.
And his mobility came bad a couple of years ago. And then this year he broke his hip and he was in hospital. So between myself and my sisters, you know, we really took care of him. And, you know, we were proud of ourselves. We really looked after him. And when the curtains closed that day, Joe, we have had a real sense of almost pride because I'm probably getting upset now. We did them proud.
Yeah, of course.
And we trusted them and they let us down. And they cannot do that to people. And how many people have they left prior to go over the 72 hours? I can guarantee you not one family was called. And this is what I'm talking about. Don't put a code of ethics in and a standard that you try to reach and then just ignore them when things go a little bit wrong. Honesty is the best policy. If you need to close the crematorium down, close it down.
Glass
7 days now for rashes.
Ask Nevin, say it was exceptional circumstances. But anyway. Okay, Julie, thanks indeed. And above all, condolences on Ray. He sounds like a fantastic man. Raymond's passing. Joe, thanks, Julie. Joe at rt.ie 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Rituals are a well-known international brand, and they're around not just this country. They do, you know, the usual mix and gather candles. They're doing advent calendars. They're doing perfumes. They're doing gift sets. An unusual combination, but very popular. Gordon Hickey. Gordon, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe? How's it going?
You've discovered very unusual about rituals, the ritual they have down in Kildare Village. What is the ritual that rituals have down in Kildare Village?
You can't just buy one item in their shop.
Okay, I go in. I buy something, say, valued €65.
No, sorry, can't buy that here. You have to buy something else.
Oh, no, hang on. I buy something. Say, I want to buy a cotton blossom fragrance stick. As you know, I'm a very big fan. And I go up to the counter. This is going to cost me at least €60.90. I hand in my cotton blossom fragrance stick. And what do they say to me?
Sorry, you can't just buy one item. You have to buy something else.
You mean I have to buy over €50?
No, no. And that's why I was shocked.
So
buy a second item.
So you're now playing the role of the shop assistant. So no. You're telling me if I go back out and there's some items in your beautiful shop for €200, if I come back up with that, you will not take my €200 because I won't buy a second item.
Well, I don't know about the €200 limit, but like,
what is
I
there
went
a,
in.
Is there a sign up?
There's literally a sign that says minimum of 2 items per customer.
Minimum. Minimum. There's no figures. It doesn't say minimum spend.
No, I didn't read the fine print now, but...
And it's not that rituals have a ritual that they're obsessed with even numbers. Would they let you buy 3 items?
I'm sure they would, yeah.
Or do you have to buy 4? Do you follow me?
Look, I'm as dumbfounded as you are, Joe.
If I want to buy... It's been on my list for a long time. If I want to buy a perfume genie... and cartridge, which will cost me €145, will I be able to get that genie bottle out of the premises, and I would have to buy a second item?
According to the little sign, you have to buy something else.
Okay. Now, have you been in any other ritual shops, so to speak?
I have, yeah. Look, I bought a candle before in Rituals on Grafton Street. It didn't seem to... I think it's Grafton Street. Didn't seem to have it. But in Kildare Village... I was there on Saturday, tried to buy a candle for my sister-in-law. It was her 30th birthday, so I thought, you know what? I literally went in just to Kildare Village just to buy a candle out of Rituals because she loves the brand.
Yeah, yeah.
So walked in, picked up a candle, had a, you know, sniffed them, picked the one that I thought she'd like, went up to the counter and handed in. The candle was €38.
Okay.
Handed it in and the girl said to me, what else would you like? And I was like, oh, I don't need anything else. And she was like, oh, you have to buy something else. And I was like, well, I don't need anything else. And she pointed to the sign that said 2 items per person. So I genuinely was looking around for hidden cameras. I was like, I thought it was joking.
Okay.
I was like, are you messing? And she was like, no, I'm not messing. And look, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, oh, you didn't have to buy the candle. But like I literally pulled off the motorway.
Solely
to buy this one candle. And the girl was like, sorry, I can't sell you this one thing. And I was like, I don't need anything else. And they were very crafty, you know. They've loads of smaller items on the countertop, you know, for €12, for €7. And, you know, obviously I was like, I don't need anything else. And I'm usually very firm with stuff like that. But because it was in a hurry, I was shocked. Like, I kind of got a shock.
What did you pick up and buy?
I ended up spending €7 on a shower gel for myself that I didn't need. They had,
and we know, like, and we know, Gordon, you're having a hair on your head.
So you, I do, I went for that.
I know you do. No, we've all seen the signs. Minimum spend for credit cards, €10.
A fiver.
Five, whatever.
Yeah. Like, look,
buy,
the,
but,
re-
the bog off, buy one, get one free.
Yeah.
But this is buy one, you must buy something
else. Yeah. And like, and look, the only reason,
or basically,
the only reason
if you, no, hang on, let's finish the sentence, Gordon.
Yeah.
Buy one, or buy one, you have to buy a second. If you don't buy a second, get out of the shop.
Essentially, yeah. Imagine.
is there a name on this in the consumer world that I haven't come across yet?
I don't know. I literally was like, this can't be legal. You know, I left the shop. Obviously, I just paid and I left.
Yeah,
and as soon as I walked out of the shop, I was thinking to myself, what just happened? Like, how am I after being conned into spending another €7 that I didn't want to because I wasn't allowed by one candle?
Hmm.
And then I was like, I'm 42. I've never.
Well, apparently we rang. Like this. We can't get a response from Rituals.
Well, supposedly there's lots of other shops in Kildare Village doing the exact same. Because I put up a video on TikTok.
Well, the Grafton Street Rituals don't insist on you buying a second item. But then again, in fairness to Rituals in Kildare, and I know you use the word there, but the Rituals in Kildare, it's up front. They're saying it. You are getting a second item for the value of the second item.
Yeah, but like, you're with me. To pay an extra €7 that I didn't need to.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, they would say you weren't forced. Bear with me. I have to play. When these companies don't come on, I have to say stupid things on their behalf. Do you follow me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So are you in the business yourself?
I am, and that's why it kind of took me by surprise, because I own a coffee shop on Thomas Street. And it was only when I left I was thinking to myself, could you imagine someone walking into me and asking for a cappuccino and me saying to him, sorry, I can't give you a cappuccino. You have to buy a croissant with that.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be shut down. I wouldn't last long. So that's why I was thinking to myself, like, how did the bigger companies
get
away with
stuff like
this? And the
fact that Kildare Village identifies as a discount outlet.
Exactly.
My next question, Gordon, is do other shops do the same?
Well, according to the people commenting on the video, people were saying there's, I think, Charlotte Tilbury, and there's a few shops down there seem to have that. And, you know, and look, that's why I got in touch with yourself. So I was thinking, one, I want to know, is this legal? You know, can you kind of say to someone, you cannot buy one item? And then the other thing was, how are Kildare Village getting away with this? you know?
And apparently other people have the same problem. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number. And I'll especially give out the email address today in account of the US election. And the results will be, I think, smashing it around this time tomorrow, looking at the fallout. So I'm appealing to our USA listeners to contact us, joe@rt.ie, if you want to participate in tomorrow's progress. Gail is in Carlow. Gail, what happened?
Hi, Joe. A while ago, I was in Kildare Village, and I went into numerous of those kind of cosmetic stores.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot of them in Kildare Village, and anyone I went into appeared to have the sign, two items to purchase.
Ah.
So, you know, I turned around, shook the dust off my sandals, so to speak, and left and would not spend my money in there.
So you say every shop you went into in Kildare Village?
Every shop that was selling cosmetics.
That's different. That's different now if it's a
Now, I went into
policy
numerous
for the whole
shops.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that anyone that I went to, I'm not saying every cosmetic shop in Kildare Village has the same policy. Anyone I went into had the same policy. So I wouldn't spend my money in there. Like your last caller said, you know, you can't force people to buy two items, you know. And he was quite specific. He was looking for a present for his sister-in-law. But I wouldn't spend my money in a shop that they insist you buy two items. So I just didn't buy anything.
And then I've been in Kildare Village, and it's fantastic. But going into Kildare Village, as Gordon said, you do have to make an effort. You go to the car park, you have to go in through the gates or whatever. Like, is there a big sign up saying, please, I know there's a big sign up for the coach park and all that carry on, but is there a big sign up saying, please remember at least two items only in every transaction.
Well, these were in kind of makeup beauty yeah. type shops. Any, as I said, it may not be all stores, but any of the stores I went to, and I just bought nothing because, as far as I was concerned, mm-hmm. it was just a kind of to catch people out. You might have wanted to buy one thing, but they had, as that gentleman said, there's, you know, lesser value things that people just grab. You know what I mean? So, no, they just did without my business, and I won't be returning to buying off them. So the only way, you know, stores kind of cop on if people do what I did was, like, just don't give them your custom.
But if you've travelled on, you know, there's coach trips from Belfast starting again this weekend.
I saw it. I was there to Kildare Village.
So you're hardly going to travel. I know, but you're hardly going to...
The day I was there, there was a coach from Donegal. Like, it was obviously, you know...
But you are. Well, you once know. You go there, you know, you're going to get off the bus. You're wrecked for us there. You're going to get off the bus.
Yeah.
And you're hardly going to get back on the bus in a huff.
No. But, like, you buy your... You go to your local pharmacy or somewhere where they can give you some information about your cough syrup, but also buy your cosmetics. And they're the kind of people that when you have your charity auction for your child's school or your football... draw, they're the ones that go along and give the hampers and give the €100 voucher, not the big shops.
Good point.
And that's why I try and shop locally when
Very
I can.
Good point. Okay. I'm just
wondering. That's all I have to say.
Well, Gail, are they not saying to you, is it, Kildare Village is a discount outlet, that's the way it's characterised.
Yeah.
And they're saying, well, actually, we don't want to give you a discount just on one item, we want to give you a discount on two items. Can you see the tongue on my cheek?
I can see the tongue in your cheek, and I know you're thinking the same way as me, that you're like, these. It's just a kind of an idea to catch people. And one does it, then they all do it. I was like, and then they look at you when you're there, like they did to that gentleman, like, oh, sure. Like, you're so behind times. You don't realise this is what people do these days.
Get with the project.
You're so, like, not with. That's what I...
But imagine, Gordon, you could have been there all day going up and down. You buy one item, obviously buy two, and you go and sit, you're walking out the door and you see something you want to buy. You with me?
Yeah.
Gordon? And you were going, I said, yeah, I can't buy, I have to buy something else. So now you've bought four. You come in to buy four, for one item you've now bought four.
You're going back out the door
and a customer says to you, oh, those advent calendars are absolutely, and you're taken by the advent calendar. And you forget by the time you go back up to the counter to say, oh, you have to buy a second.
And that's why I wonder, like...
You'd want to go, you're going shopping today, you want to go in a small van.
my thing is, I was wondering if I had bought two things and then forgot and went to go buy a second or a third item.
Yeah,
would they let me buy the third item?
No, like, even
though that's what I was just thinking. Is it per transaction? So Gordon goes up and he buys his candle for his sister-in-law and he buys something else there, and then he gets his receipt. Then he's like, "Oh gosh, that's quite nice. Her Christmas is coming up. She might like that."
Out again.
Then does he have to buy another thing with that too?
Yeah.
Then he has four. Yeah. That listeners used to be able to tell us, I'm sure.
You were lucky to get out alive, Gordon.
I'm alive to tell the story.
Well, people do enjoy the trip.
And Gordon, really nice talking to you.
Okay.
That's all I have to
Ask. Okay, go to Mina Gail Hambridge, go to Mina Margaret Gordon.
What's
the name of your coffee shop? Come on, let's give yourself a plug in Thomas Street in Dublin near Vicar
Container
Street.
Container coffee there, just facing the entrance to Guinness.
Okay. Well done. Go to Margaret Gordon Hickey, Thomas Street, Dublin. Container coffee.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liam Corcoran, Bruce was stolen.
He was indeed, Joe. He was indeed.
Tell us about Bruce.
Saturday night, I suppose, really, between the hours of 11 o'clock and 12:30 in the morning, he was stolen from our property.
Mm-hmm. And what age is Bruce and what breed is Bruce? And...
He's a Doberman, 11 years of age. Mm-hmm. And he's on a lot of medication at the moment for arthritis in his back. So,
and how are you so adamant, Liam, that he was actually stolen?
My neighbour's security cameras have captured CCTV video of people coming in through the back of our properties with flash lamps through the middle of the night from 11:40, I suppose, really, till about 12:30. So he's a large breed.
Yeah. Is he a restricted breed? Does he have to be muzzled or...?
They do if they're out in the open, yeah. Okay. But, like, he's a pure pet.
And your home is it in Killarney or just outside Killarney?
It's just in the outskirts of Killarney, like.
Kilcommon, Master Gee.
Okay.
So he is, Mike. Why would anyone kidnap Bruce?
I honestly don't know.
Is it Bruce or Bryce? I have two names here. Is Bruce,
Bruce
or Bruce?
Yeah. Bruce.
Why would
Bruce,
anyone kidnap Bruce?
I honestly don't know. I just cannot figure it out.
Is he valuable as a stud dog?
Breeding. Joe, he's 11 years of age. He's arthritis. He can barely walk. So I don't know. I don't know why somebody would actually break into a person's property and take an old dog.
And you say CCTV. So, Liam, did you see who stole Bruce?
We can see a number of bodies coming down through neighbouring property. You can see flash lamps. You can see a car passing up the road. You can see them turning, and you can see them more or less throwing something into the back of a car, yeah, and then passing down the front of our property afterwards, maybe about 2 or 3 minutes later.
How many people would Bruce come with me on a lead?
No, he wouldn't. No.
So how would they get Bruce?
I'm thinking was he sedated or something? Because our property, we have a big wall at the back of our house, so it would take at least 3 to 4 people to lift this dog from the back of our property out over the wall and up a field. So I'm thinking was he sedated, like?
But you still don't know why.
I don't know why. No. That's the sickening thing about it.
And how much medication is Bruce on?
Oh, jeez, he's probably on about 9 to 10 tablets a day, Joe. Every day, morning and evening. You know?
But I presumed he didn't steal his medication.
No.
Well, is it just tablets to keep him steady, or are they life-saving tablets? Do you follow me?
It's a bit of both, really, Joe, to be quite honest. He's that age, he's a large breed. You know, it's a bit of both, really, to keep him going.
So how long will he keep going without medication?
That's the sickening part about it. We don't know. We do not know. We do not know.
Yeah. So... Where do we look up for... Where do you sell dogs? You sell them online, do you? Or is there a magazine or Dundeal? Or I don't know. Where do you sell dogs?
I honestly don't Dundeal. I suppose you've dogs and Dundeal and stuff, but he'd be of no value to anybody because he's so old. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the.
That's why I just can't figure out. We have a property that's gated, it's fenced off, no dog can come in or go out. You know what I mean? And it's so secure, which we thought it was. So people breaking into your property, it's a sickening. It's sickening.
Now, Gardaí.
Yeah.
What did they say?
The Gardaí, to be fair to them, they were checking. They've checked CCTV cameras, the whole lot. It's just we cannot get the registration of the vehicles. We cannot get the registration.
Well, have there been any other... The Gardaí are the people to tell you. Have there been any other incidents in the area?
No, there hasn't been none.
So you think Bruce was targeted?
Definitely, 100%, yeah. Had to been, because he would have been sitting, any time he's out in the day, he'd be sitting out the front, lying down in the grass. You'd see him from the gate. You'd think there would be nothing wrong with this dog, but there is a lot wrong with him. Do you know what I mean? He does need his medication and stuff like that to keep him going.
But if you're to buy or sell a Doberman, an 11-year-old Doberman, let's presume he's in good health.
Yeah.
How much would he cost, if anything?
I honestly don't know.
Okay,
because
you're saying you're unaware, apart from the value to you and your family, you're unaware that he was so valuable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That a group of people would come in the middle of the night, go out of their way to actually kidnap him, take him away. Now, you've had no communication from the thieves.
No, nothing. Yeah, nothing. Okay. High up or low down. Nothing at all. We've been on.
Your banana. And have you your children there living with you? You suspect you have.
Yeah, like we've okay. three kids in the house. Like, you know, like we're all sick. It's like losing a kid. You know.
Yeah. What age? Like what age are your children?
3, 13, and 22.
So two of them would have been. Two of them have known nothing but Bruce.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. He's been with them since he's been born. Really.
And is there any point in putting up a photograph?
We have photographs up on Instagram, Facebook. We have them everywhere. Dog Trust. We've on every site. Yeah, we've gone on to the ports. We've got on to everybody. Dog pounds. The whole lot. We just heard nothing back.
Any distinctive features?
He would. Yeah, he'd have his left paw. Like there is a cut in his left paw.
His left. So like front paw.
Left paw. Left front paw. Yeah. Okay. He kind of walks. He walks with a pure limp. So he's very unsteady in himself. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Okay, and we'll tweet a picture of Leif of Bruce at Joe Liveline or at RTE Liveline, and people can hopefully. But again, it's a reminder of how important pets are in families, especially. I'm thinking of your young family. Okay, thanks indeed, Liam Corcoran, Gurumila Maga. That's Liam Corcoran in Killarney. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Back to the call by Julia Gaynor and her family earlier on for a regulator, an overseer, so to speak, a state overseer of there are of graveyards, but of crematoria. Sean Fox. Sean, what happened in your case?
Good afternoon, Joe. Back in April, my father passed away, and my father's wishes were that he would be cremated and then have his ashes spread. And when we got our ashes back from Newlands Cross, they were contaminated with screws, staples, some bits of metal, a lot of stuff. And then also they weren't ashes; they were bits of bone. It just wasn't broken up properly. So I had meetings then with some people from Newlands Cross, well, actually over the crematoria, there's three of them, I think, or four of them.
There's one in Newlands Cross, one in Dardistown, one in Glasnevin, yeah.
That's it, yeah. And so I was informed that they had had a problem with a machine back in January. Mm-hmm. This was April now. They said that they had done a repair on the machine in January, and then they had another problem with my father's in April, and that's how the stuff ended up in my dad's remains due to machine malfunction or whatever. I suppose the bottom line in all that, Joe, is that I was informed that it's not a machine that actually finishes the process. It's a person that actually finishes that process, and that's what I was informed by the crematoria themselves.
What do you mean? It's the ashes are.
The ashes are poured checked. In by a person. Yes, a person does that at the very end. So, I don't know if you've seen any of the pictures, but horrendous. I mean, how you could miss it, I don't know. But look,
and
that's
I presume
what happened.
You got an apology.
We got an apology. I think if you've had an issue, you know, the fact that there's no regulator, Joe, is it leaves you nowhere to turn. Like are we now?
Nowhere to appeal.
No, there's nowhere. There's absolutely nowhere. And just listening to that lady, I mean, for her father, Julie, for her father to have, you know, been missing so for 12 days or whatever. I mean, it's horrendous on the family. And you don't get to do these things over, and you're entrusting your loved one, you know, and expecting that they're going to be treated, you know, the way they should be treated. Let's put it that way. And it just leaves complete devastation. Something that you just to try come to grips with. I don't know that you ever really can. I know my family, we're still struggling majorly with what's happened. Yeah, we need a regulator. There has to be a regulator. I mean, back in 2012, they Thomas Buchanan, the Labour CDC, I had to go in, Joe, and had to research all of this stuff in the midst of losing, you know, a person that I absolutely
admired.
You know, an amazing, amazing man, amazing, an amazing, amazing legacy left behind. And so, but having to research all of that and try and find where you can turn, what you can do, you've nowhere. There's absolutely nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go. So we need a regulator. We really need a regulator. And like I was saying, Thomas Rouhan tried to bring in regulation back in 2012, and that was
Statement where, like, if Glass ever want me to read out, they'd be better off coming on. I just can't be reading out non-stop statements from Glass and Evan saying they apologise, deeply regret. Do you accept that?
No, you know what, Joe? The fact that you don't have a regulator, you have no idea, and I have no idea.
They said they make a donation. They made a donation to. They were offering a donation to your favourite charity, yeah. And in Julie's case, they say we waived the cremation fees.
Yeah, but the point I would make with all of this is, you can do whatever you want to do, but you don't get back this. I don't get to. To bury my dad again. I don't get to have my dad cremated again. I don't get to receive back my dad. They're my dad's remains that they sent back the way they did. That's her father that they lost for 12 days. People make mistakes, and that's understandable. But we need a regulator, because without a regulator, I have no idea that happened, that lady, other than she came on national radio and said, shared her story. She would have no idea unless I went to the papers and did what we had to do to try and bring out word that we need a regulator in this area.
Okay.
So we need to have a regulator. We need to have someone that you can trust, because you have no idea, and I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, Glasnevin, Trustweb, they can say they're sorry and apologise and this is a one-off or whatever, as many times as they want. But we've no way of knowing that. Nobody has any way of knowing that unless there's somewhere you can turn and go, okay, did this happen 6 months ago? Did this happen? You know, there's no way of knowing that. We really do need a regulator, and that's what I've called for.
Yeah. And by the way, Sean, you became very rightly so, I suspect, animated when you said your father was Johnny Fox was a legend. Tell us a little bit about him, because I asked.
Yeah, my dad was an athletics coach. He was coach of to Rashida Adeleke.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
From the time she was 12 years old right the way through.
Okay, now the name is, yeah.
Yeah, and then he also was co-founder of Darkness Into Light.
Oh, wow.
So, huge legacy that he's left behind. And you know, like, I mean, a lot of money raised for counselling and for mental health awareness and so forth. And I know my dad would be devastated with what's occurred in our family due to this.
And in your research, Sean, do you know what percentage of deceased are being cremated rather than buried, or vice versa?
If I can remember, Joe, because to be honest, I think it was somewhere around 20-something percent, I think, what I said, but it's growing.
It's growing and it's going to
continue growing. And that, you know, without a regulator, it's actually probably really good business for a businessman to be in. That's a horrible thing to say, but if you don't have a regulator and you're going to self-regulate, and you're not going to be held responsible.
Because yesterday I was up myself and Angus McNally went up to Gay Bourne's grave up in St. Fintan's in Hoth. He's 5 years dead. Yes, God rest him. And they have a relatively new wall for people who have been cremated. And it just, I see it probably once every 6 months, because a great friend of ours, Myrna Russell, is buried up there as well. And we go up often. But it's definitely becoming more popular, if that's the right word, isn't it?
Yeah.
More common or whatever, that people are cremated.
It's becoming more common, but it's also becoming a necessity, Joe, because we're not going to have the ground. We don't, the ground is no longer going to be there. So,
of course.
We just need, and I'll keep saying the same thing again and again, we need regulation. You know, self-regulation, and you're around quite a while. I won't say you're long in the tooth, but you're around long enough to know that self-regulation doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know.
From our history.
From our history, we know that. It absolutely does not work. And to allow, self-regulation for a traumatic time in people's lives when their loved ones are, you know, been handed over. And without regulation, it's just it's a disaster. I won't say it's a disaster waiting to happen, because in my family's eyes, it's already happened. Mm. You know, it's a disaster. You know, I mean, I could tell you some of the stuff that took place afterwards, just personal stuff, you know, trying to deal with it you don't have time to grieve properly or anything, you know.
By the way, I knew Johnny Fox had a ring to it, because my father, Jimmy Ches Duffy, worked, or knew your father. Did your father work in Glen Abbey?
He did indeed.
I'm not that old. I have a good memory, Sean.
There you go, yeah.
Johnny Fox and my father were two buddies, as Sean O'Casey would say. And he was a great man. Both of them actually great men. Okay, Joe, Sean, I'm sorry you had to go through this. I know you've had it raised in the Dáil about regulator, and you have Julia Gaynor and her family on your side now. And I cannot see how there's now, as I say, 10 on the island, 8 in this jurisdiction, and increasing that anyone would object per se. Okay, Sean, good to meet you.
Can I say one other thing?
Yes, of course.
If you would have my permission to pass my email address on to anybody that would that would ring in with stories of stuff that has happened, please pass my email address on to them, or phone number. That's perfectly fine for you to do that.
Okay.
And thanks a million for taking the call,
Joe. Thanks for making the call. I appreciate it. Thanks indeed. That's Sean Fox, back tomorrow at 1:45. On sound, Kieran Dunn, Richie Byrne on research, Owen McLaughlin produce. And as I say, if you would, if you're listening in the United States of America, joe@rte.ie, especially for the next 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, or indeed 4 years, please consider us in your prayers. Consider us as part of your conversation tomorrow, as the result becomes more, less clear. Okay, that's joe@rte.ie. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Refresh your home with the latest colours and designs in curtains and bedding, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.